Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharged phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the Pushy Broad from the Bronx. Welcome to our show, Recovery Recharged, where I sit here with Dr. Pat, and we talk about some amazing things. Right, Doc?
Yeah. I mean, I love this. Ellen, you know, like, let me just say this. I was talking with Carrie in the last show, and Carrie talks about Get Big Out Loud. What you're doing and the way that you've brought this forward now in such a devastating time of need, this is Get Very Big Out Loud. You have taken your life's work, and what you've done is you've said, wait a minute, this is, we've got to go big here. People need help. And it's all aspects of help. And what you've done in stepping forward and the people you're helping, and folks may not know this because we're going to get rolling in a minute. So I just want to say, if you are out there and you are yourself or you know someone that needs help in recovery, you need to be looking at getting recovery recharged, whatever aspect of that is. This is the passion and the purpose of Ellen Stewart. You know, this is a woman that has come into this arena early on and said, we need to help people on a personal level. This is not a one size fits all. Addiction is not a one size fits all. Recovery is not a one size fits all. And the emotional stressors of COVID-19 is not a one size fits all. And so I have had the pleasure of working with Ellen now for, you know, moving into this year here. And we have gotten beyond and changed the topics and are addressing what is heavy on your heart. Today's show is another one. And I needed to thank you out loud for that. Pushy Broad from the Bronx.
Thank you so much. I couldn't have done it without your support. And we are coming right up November 1st on our 1 year anniversary.
Yes, we
are. We have just continued and we're going into our second year. So I'm really thrilled about that. And
me
when
too.
You talk about dedicating my life, we have someone with us today who has also dedicated his life. You know, we talk about the OGs of this industry, of the addiction and recovery industry, and we have someone today that is going to talk about something that is another part of addiction and is brand new in this millennium, things that we've never had to deal with before. And we are discussing today the truth about vaping with a very dear friend of mine and someone that has been in the industry as long as me, Mr. Brad Lamb.
Hi, Brad.
Hey, hi, Dr. Pat.
So there are a few things that are going to happen. First of all, Brad discusses his brand new book, Quit Vaping, Your 28-Day Program to Stop Smoking E-Cigarettes. So we're going to learn about what's going on there and how difficult it is to stop, and what's the new science around it, and how to talk to parents about their kids vaping as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to say something, and Brad, I know you're going to jump in on this. Folks didn't know what they didn't know about vaping. But then there were folks that knew about vaping. And now we're in a whole new world of blending hearsay with science and understanding the magnitude of this. And so I am thrilled that you're going to be here talking about the truth about it.
Well, there was a time when we were about to release the book, Pat and Ellen, and, you know, vaping was certainly a conversation point. I think back to about a year ago, I was acquainted with a fellow from Michigan. He was then 17. He became the world's youngest double lung transplant because of his vaping, with just, you know, nicotine vaping. And I kept seeing these warning signs, and I'd been working on this book for a long time, and seeing more and more people vape and thinking, you know, God, I smoked for 25 years, and the impact on my lungs after having stopped, you know, 15 years ago, it was something I was passionate about helping people, one, get educated about this thing that they knew so little about. But the thing about vaping is, if used as directed, it is potentially lethal. You know, if used as created, it's harmful to your lungs. That's even before COVID. And so when I was launching the book and COVID was just starting to rear its head, I remember I had a marketing meeting about the book, and I thought, oh, this is the worst time to launch a book. And but in any event, you never know how it will work out. It certainly has been a year full of mysteries, that's for sure. But I think so many of us started nicotine when we didn't know. You know, I knew it wasn't good for you. It was post Surgeon General's warning. I think I started in 1982 as a high schooler. But then when I became, you know, addicted and suffered in with other things, meth and alcohol, I smoked a lot. I was a 2-pack-a-day smoker. I knew that it wasn't good for you. I knew that it caused 90% of lung cancers. And then when I got recovery, I knew that I had to stop. And I will admit, I do have a judgment about people in long-term recovery that continue to chain smoke or vape, because I see that as just another self-harming behavior, an addictive behavior that, God, if you'd give it a chance, you could probably be better to yourself with quitting.
Was that ever a problem for you, Dr. Pat? Did you ever smoke?
Yes, I did. But I'm that person that when I make my mind up to do something, I do it. And I remember, I don't know, was I 30? But I go way back. I mean, I go as far back as 12 years old. I mean, growing up on the streets in New York, if you didn't smoke, you just weren't it. I don't know if anybody remembers that. Now it's kind of the opposite. But smoking and drinking are like two peas in a pod. Fast forward to where we are today. But I was like, no, I'm done. I'm not doing it anymore. And then, you know, I come from the generation where they did, like, you could smoke at work and then you couldn't. And it was like, oh my gosh, this is like so much trouble. And I made my mind up and I stopped. I don't recommend that. But yeah, I was a 3-pack-a-dayer.
Do you remember when we would fly in a plane and there was the smoking section was right here, and then the next row was the non-smoking section, which if you smoked, it was gravy. But if you didn't smoke, if you were 80% of the plane, it was the worst thing possible.
Absolutely. I started at 14 and I smoked for 40 years, and I stopped smoking on and off for years, on and off. I stopped for a year, 5 years. I was running for a time, so I automatically stopped smoking. And I have to tell you, I'm the most guilty here of all of you, because I just stopped smoking again this past March of 2020 because of COVID-19. I was so afraid that if, God forbid, I got that virus, that my lungs wouldn't be able to handle it. So what we say is an instant motivator for me was, I need to get myself as healthy as possible. Yeah. So when did you start to write this book, Brad? Tell us when the inception came about.
I wrote a stop smoking book about 7 years ago, Ellen. And that book, I offered it as a curriculum and how to for other treatment centers. And it was just something that I think that I wanted to do. It wasn't tied in with a book, with a television show, which has often been how I've done other books. But then, you know, the vaping book I started getting really curious about it 5 years ago. And I have a family member who works for one of the big tobacco companies. And I heard stories about all the money that they were putting into smoking remediation efforts. And, you know, they were buying vape brands. And they saw this as the way to stop their revenue quarter to quarter from greatly diminishing. Because, you know, a lot of smokers were heeding the counsel of professionals and saying, hey, I've got to do something different. They had seen their parents and grandparents die from lung cancer, which is an incredibly painful, long, awful illness. If you're lucky, if you're not lucky, you know, it also causes mouth cancers, bladder cancer, intestinal cancer, brain cancer. It's linked to so many of the cancers that are the prevalent killers of our parents and their grandparents, because so many Americans smoked. You know, it was about half of American men smoked at its height. And it was sexy. It was portrayed in media as a great way to stay slim. You know, it was marketed very specifically to women to be chic and shapely. And it was promoted by doctors and nurses and other healthcare professionals in advertisements. And, you know, there was nothing like it because it gave you a quick jolt. And it also perfectly trained the brain to take another one in about 30 minutes.
Right. It was also very glamorous, was it not? I mean, all of that glamour and in the movies and on TV, you know, and then they put out things specifically for women, like you said. It was a very glamorous thing. And you saw all the actors and TV personalities. Everybody was doing that. And now that we had an alternative, people thought that this would be their savior, right?
Absolutely.
Vaping was the alternative.
And, you know, it's interesting that nicotine is both a stimulant and a sedative. And so here's how it works. You inhale, the nicotine hits your brain. It discharges epinephrine. That's that rush that's followed by the crash. It's depression and fatigue. So nicotine is a fake way to self-soothe because it tricks you into thinking it's a positive when it's not. And it's just an addiction that drives you. You will feel less anxious once you stop. You will feel better with your lung capacity and ability to breathe when you stop, I promise. But the addiction cycle is really powerful. You know, nicotine addicts more people on the planet than any other drug. So if you use nicotine, either with smoking or vaping or chewing, you're not alone. You're an amazing company. And anything that inhibits lung capacity during the coronavirus, you know, just reinforces that it's high time to do something. And that's really why I wrote the book, was one, to explain what the vaping crisis is, how it came to be. You know, it's very concerted, a powerful marketing effort on the part of big tobacco and big vape. And then it's just an addiction. So you have to treat it like there's a detox involved with it, because your mind and your body is going to want to stay with the substance that, you know, has trained you to love it so. But it will never love you back. And there are really useful ways to quit that are really successful. So that's why I wrote it. I kind of thought, God, this book will never sell. Nobody will want to buy this book. In fact, my friends that vape would poo-poo me on, you know, saying, hey, would you let me try to help you stop? You know, they say, hey, you know, this is good for me. You know, it's so much better for me than smoking a lit traditional cigarette. And I say, is it? How do you know that? And they would spit out the talking points of that were, you know, big tobacco's marketing to them. And so I wrote the book thinking maybe it'll help somebody. And then last summer, when I sold the book to my publisher, something sort of remarkable happened. I was in Provincetown and I was just determined that I was going to finish this book that was literally, it was in my backpack for 5 years. I carry a paper copy of what I'm working on, what I'm writing. And my husband said, honey, are you ever going to finish that? He said, what are you working on? I said, oh, it's that bait book. I don't know if I'm, you know, it's the hardest, smallest book I've ever written. And then there was some new science that was coming to light, because there were the first real widespread studies that were giving data of what it was doing to us in our cardiovascular system and you know, this beautiful body as a whole that we have. And while I was tidying it up and sending my agent a note, like, I think I'm going to finish this. And he said, I don't know, Lamb, I don't think that book's going to sell. Then the cases started to pop of people dying across the country. And it wasn't just from people vaping THC, which, you know, those cases, big tobacco publicized those cases like crazy online and paid for placement and pushed out stories about how, oh, you know, it's really a THC problem. It's not a THC problem. Our lungs are these beautiful 3 pounds that drive everything that we do because we've got to breathe. And so vaping is a direct frontal assault on that incredible tool that we have. And my hope is, you know, that it will help people stop both with a detox and then a process to stay stopped.
Yeah. I'm really glad we're talking about this in using language like detox, process, addiction. I'm really glad we are, because I think for decades, the addictive nature of nicotine, plus let's just be clear. If you ever want to look at what they really put into a cigarette, you can get all the ingredients, including formaldehyde and a whole bunch of other things. And it's certainly a far cry from when Grandpapa would be sitting on his deck down there in Virginia with a piece of tobacco he was chewing. And, you know, he knew where it came from. It's a far cry from then, but the addiction is still the same.
And, you know, you bring up a really interesting point, Pat. It's a far cry, or it's a long ways from the roll your own to, hey, it comes in a nice pretty box. And how that occurred was when the boys went overseas into war, the U.S. government found that, God, they love those cigarettes. Those were proving incredibly popular. And they reduced anxiety and they made them feel better. And there was a social contract around it. Hey, can I have a cigarette? And so we were given those dumb things away overseas. And so that generation came back, the greatest generation, as some have called it, and they were hooked. They were hooked in numbers never before seen on this new product that was, while cigarettes were not a new product, the pretty rolled ones in a pretty box marketed to us, that was a new market, certainly, that took America by storm.
And yeah, certainly did. And yeah, you saw it, like I said, you know, in TVs and movies with Mad Men, it was just something that people advertised. The original Lucky Strike commercials and Camel commercials, it became a whole marketable situation. And even in the foreword of your book, Dr. Oz really picked up the torch, so to speak, as well. I saw in his foreword talks about how nicotine and nicotine cessation had been a very large part of his life. So he really was right there with you, Brad. That forward is very impressive.
Yeah, Mehmet told me years ago, and I was part of the launch of the Dr. Oz show. And those first 3 years, I did a lot of intervention work, but lifestyle intervention work too, that involved food and nicotine and substances for sure. But really looking at those things that are part of our lives that are cutting our lives short, you know, and how can I do a little better? And back then, you know, he was a well-known heart surgeon there in New York, and he had made a contract with his patients: if you smoke, I will not operate on you. And so he made nicotine replacement therapy and a quit part of his process, that pre-surgical process for those that smoked. And he was very firm about it, and still stays firm with that. If you're not willing to let him help you stop smoking, he's not going to go work on your heart, because you're probably going to die soon, which is the stark reality of those of us over 50 who continue to smoke are damaging this thing that is needed as never before.
Yeah. I mean, my family, I come from the whole thing, right? Smokers all the way through. Dad, the heart. Stepmom, her heart literally exploded. She was a 3-packer a day. Right. Sister died on a hospital floor. Asthma couldn't turn her over. Another sister, cancer. Right. And the reason I'm sharing this is I come from, how do I say it? on my mom's side of the family, I come from a family of people that lived in Virginia and in the South, and they worked at one of the largest tobacco industry cigarette making companies on the planet. And so, you know, part of this, I watched every day them being infused. I mean, cigarettes are us. There was no question about it. And at the same time, I want to ask you both this question. Slowly, we started to get information. And I say slowly. Now we have information, right, Brad? Right, Ellen? We have it now. But if you go back four decades, right, slowly, and then what did we get? The Surgeon General.
Mm-hmm.
Are we still getting slowly with the vaping, or do we have enough?
Well, here's the thing. On the Surgeon General's report with tobacco was a game changer, because it helped then public advocacy groups that were they started to really study the public costs that were being borne by our tax dollars paid for by our tax dollars to support those that needed care, critical, you know, end of life care, because they were smokers. And so that was a turning point, not only for the packaging change. There had to be a warning on the packaging. And now, in fact, it's even bolder than it was. For years, Europe started showing the images of face, lung, jaw cancer, lungs that were just brutalized by the impact of long-term smoking, right on the box. But for the U.S., it was much slower. And what happened with the vape is very insidious. Barack Obama, President Obama, who I did so many great things, I think, for healthcare and for increasing access to care, he installed on one of his senior positions at the FDA HHS, a fellow who was on the board of Big Tobacco's big purchase of a vape company. And so those initial reports that were really it perfect world, it would have been outlawed or regulated in some purposeful way back 10 years ago. And that was those truths were diverted and diminished as they were reported, because the committee to decide what are we going to do with this vaping problem had been infected with Big Tobacco's talking points. And it changed, at least for our generation, how it was sold. We saw these vaping stores pop up all around the country. And then they started infiltrating 12-step fellowships like AA. And they started offering their space for 12-step meetings. And they would offer samples for people during the 12-step meetings. And so you could have vape meetings where we used to have smoking AA meetings were an option for years for folks. And I think that really interrupted the correction that was occurring then because of the increased access to healthcare. And it was really a dollars and cents conversation then. It was like, okay, if we're gonna spend all this public money on helping people have insurance and be healthier, to mitigate end-of-life costs with diabetes and many preventable cancers and heart disease, we've got to have a conversation about vaping. And it wasn't had because it was infiltrated. And I talk about that in Quit Vaping, which I think is an interesting how it happened narrative, because it helps us really, if you vape, it helps you have a scapegoat. It helps create a villain in this effort to stop. And I think sometimes that is useful. I think we can use all different sorts of leverage to wrap our heads around change. And in this case, we were duped and we were too dumb to know it. And people like me that were saying, hey, I think you're getting this data wrong, really didn't have a bully pulpit. And those that had a bully pulpit were being paid in part by the effort of Big Tobacco.
That's amazing that you say it, because people don't understand that correlation, okay, on a very basic level. The whole idea of vaping and using vaping as a way to stop smoking as early as maybe 2006, 2007,
right.
Nobody realized that this was all based on big tobacco and the whole feelings around nicotine, because many people, like regular people, think that if I'm vaping, then I'm not around nicotine. Okay. People felt, no matter what, in the beginning, that if I vaped, I wouldn't be addicted to cigarettes anymore. Those were the myths that were being circulated. That's what people believed.
And Ellen, if we grabbed 100 people right now who vape, we grabbed them and did a survey. You know, many of them, in some groups, the majority of them don't know that vaping is nicotine addiction, that at its, the active ingredient in vape is nicotine, which is sort of, it's incredulous. Like, how could they not know? And then on the flip, there are those that are actually very educated users, consumers, who are looking for the most nicotine for their buck. And they're looking for the highest nicotine level, and they're tweaking their vaping device so that they get a higher mix of juice into their lungs. So there are those folks that, you know, are the uneducated consumers. And then there are those that actually know, and they want more. They're working to engineer it for more. But I'll tell you one group that did not, can never feign that they did not know, is big tobacco. They knew that it was the perfected form of the cigarette. They knew that it was three times better absorption of nicotine into the mouth, into the bloodstream, and then in the brain, into the brain. They knew that it was a beautiful way to hook the person that loved tobacco more than almost anything, but wanted to be healthier and were concerned about what it was doing to their insides, even as it made their outsides smell better. Because I know a lot of the people that were early adopters from cigarettes to vaping, you know, it smelled better. They didn't stink like tobacco. It made a kind of a sexy gurgle sound, which always kind of creeped me out, because I imagined that it was like cooking your yeah. you know, coating your lungs. But, you know, yeah. then there was also that beautiful plume of smoke, which was sort of like, that's interesting looking. What's that? And then if you walked through it, it smelled good. Often it was like, caramely, and or like, oh, what's that? Oh, it's cotton candy, you know. And so they were marketing to our generation of teens, those that were new adapters, and they promised us that they would never market to kids, that this is really just to help smokers stop, and that they were never going to do those things that they had hooked a generation in the 30s and 40s. But that's exactly what they did. They used the same playbook that big tobacco used back then to hook our generation of kids with vaping. And so when the coronavirus started to present itself as this, oh my God, how do we get it? Well, you know, really it comes in, it's a virus and it's airborne, seems like, and it's going to greatly impact our lungs. I knew that because many high schools and junior high schools were reporting, hey, you know, most of our kids now vape, that this would be, you know, we would not know what the long-term impact of it is for years. We just won't. We won't know what the vapor who's 18 or 15 or 13 who gets coronavirus, what long-term impact will that have on their lungs? Because we don't have we don't have any studies that are showing, well, what about the 13-year-old that doesn't vape, because so many of our kids are vaping.
Yeah. Part of it too is, and you know, I stay on top of all the research in my field as well as outside. And I have a friend who is really working very hard to get the information. And you know, my friend says the issue is not that we don't know, it's that in order for us, so what he did is he said, in order for you to get something like this to the market, you check. It's in the market. You advertise. You put whatever spin. In order for us to study it, we got to study autopsies. And he says, this is where the science is coming from, is, you know, that this is a national outbreak of vaping. This is a national outbreak. when you look at the numbers, just the way you're talking about your book, and you're seeing what this is about, people are clear. Despite how many cases we have, the descriptions of this pathology and all of the underlying conditions are limited. They're limited to surgical lung biopsies and hospitalized patients and autopsies.
It's a terrible thing. But now, based on your book, you're really able to answer some upfront yep. questions, some and really dispel some of the myths that have come up. So let's go over a few things that you say in your book. Yep. Does vaping actually lead to smoking cessation? Will you smoke less if you vape?
Oh, it's a great question, Ellen. So if you don't eat pizza, you have quit eating pizza. If you replace the eating of the pizza with bread that has sauce on it and lots of cheese, that's toast with sauce and cheese. But you have, in fact, not eaten pizza. So the core ingredient of vaping, the thing that compels addiction, is nicotine. And so that's the active ingredient in it. So it really is a myth to say that, hey, I quit smoking, and so I'm not addicted anymore. You have quit smoking, so you smell less smoky, but you have replaced it with something that we have even less data on, but we know causes circulation, respiratory, and mouth problems, and you need to quit. You know, and then in the book, I break it down into these four steps so that we look at how to plan the quit. And that's making the social contract with yourself and others, your support system. So you're building in leverage support that's really important to help you stay stopped. This is the drug that addicts more people on the planet than any other drug. And so I really challenge readers to plan your quit. Means you set the date, you share it with others, you ask for that support. And then step two is you manage the cravings. And we look at the real detoxification needed to get you unhooked from that incredibly addictive drug, nicotine. And I do that a few ways. I love nicotine replacement therapy. Just talking about nicotine, my mouth is so yummy and watery, it's insane. And I haven't had a cigarette in 15 years. I don't use nicotine replacement therapy, so I don't have any nicotine in me right now, or haven't for years, but talking about it still provides that I have cravings for it right now. So imagine you vaped this powerful substance you're addicted to, and then you think about going cold turkey. So look at it as a real addiction that requires a detoxification so that you don't go nuts. And really, more importantly, it's not that, you know, you're going to be so rude to somebody that they're never going to talk to you again. It's that you relapse and you stop your quit. And so I love nicotine gum. I love the lozenge, especially because it gives a throat mouth feel that's similar to smoking. And the thing that I love the most that you can order on eBay, and I give it away like candy around here, is nicotine nasal spray. You have to order it on eBay because, believe it or not, it was approved for sale in the US, but because of the corona pandemic, it's been slowed down in terms of its entry to market. But use that nicotine detox, because that is the biggest reason why people fail. If you go cold turkey, many people have gone cold turkey and quit. Most people who go cold turkey and don't look at the detox and take the detox seriously, the post-acute withdrawal syndrome symptoms, they will lapse back into the behavior. And then live the quit. I use a breathing exercise called hand to mouth that helps strengthen the lungs, but also gives you a replacement therapy for the behavior that so many of us miss and long for. And so it's a way to replace a behavior with something that is going to exercise the lungs and help sustain a quit. And then finally, it's just practice it. I continue to practice my quit 15 years later. And sometimes I have to tell you, I will walk toward the smoke of a smoker on the street because I am drawn to it all these years later. And I'm either repulsed or I want to knock them down and grab their cigarette. Honest, it is a powerful addiction that still talks to me in ways all these years later. And that's the four-step quit that I've found over the years is useful with clients that I've done interventions on, that I put in treatment, that I advocate they stop while they get off heroin or meth or alcohol, because our studies show there is a really great Hazelden study that I cite in the book that talks about how if you quit smoking and vaping while you're in treatment, the odds that you will be abstinent from your primary drug of choice at year one is much greater, 38% greater, because using the nicotine will encourage relapse. It talks to the same center in the brain that methamphetamine talks to, that cocaine talks to. That, remember, it's a depressive, and it gives you both the up and the down. And so it's a tricky drug, and it's tough to quit.
Well, yeah. You also mentioned that it is, to be effective, the book title says a 28-day program. And we know that when it comes to going into treatment, we talk about 28 days because of the science of that. So can you address that a little bit and talk about why 28 days?
Yeah. And then the other thing too, Brad, if you don't mind, is tell folks how they can find out more about you and find out about, and get their own copy of the book.
Oh, sure. The book is available through any bookstore, online or in person. I haven't been in a bookstore since February, so I know that they exist, but I haven't been there.
Amazon,
of course. I love supporting independent bookstores, which carry the book too. And it's came out on a major publisher. It's Penguin Life. And so any place you get books, you can find Quit Vaping. The previous question, I forget what it was.
28 days. Why?
I think it's good to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. I will say this, that 28-day shtick that was created really by payers, insurance providers years ago, who said, okay, kids, you go into treatment, we'll cover you for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
It's a parameter that many of us know. And I thought that it'd be a useful way to say, look, you can get through this. It's less than a month, and it's viable, and you can do it to the reader. And that's what we found too, that after a month of quitting and either tapering off of the nicotine replacement therapy or staying on it, frankly, I have friends and colleagues who have used nicotine spray and gum for 20, 30 years. Doesn't hurt them. That will never give you a throat, mouth, rectal cancer, bladder cancer, lung cancer. It will make your pocketbook thinner. But I'm all for those medication-assisted therapies. And that's what that is. That is nicotine replacement therapy. So if you need to stay on that, I say go for it, kid. You're doing great. There's no shame in that. And it's curious. I will say this. You know, I'm in 12-step fellowship recovery, and I was a meth addicted bulimic alcoholic who got better, sort of to my surprise. And you know that the hardest thing to quit of all that was giving up cigarettes. Yep. And so recently here in Los Angeles, my sponsor, who had been in recovery many, many, many years, and he too had smoked, and he died suddenly from just a heart attack during this mysterious time. And I was at a 12-step meeting, and I go to one that's on the beach on Saturdays that I've just started back to. It was a one that I would do every week and connect with my community and such. And somebody knew that my sponsor had died. And he said, hey, kid, you know, do you want me to sponsor you? Because I'm in recovery 18 years and he's in recovery longer. And I said, may I speak freely? And he said, yeah. And I said, I got to say, I said, may I really? Yes. And I said, I got to tell you, I couldn't ask you to be my sponsor because you're still living an active addiction. You smoke, what, 2 packs a day, sometimes more, he said. I said, you know, if you'll walk me to my Jeep, I'd like to give you a book that I wrote that I think could help you stop. And so it's really no judgment. But I'm not going to ask anybody to help me stay out of the hot water if they're still simmering in it. And that's how I view eating disorders. That's how I view other active mental health issues that plague so many of us. There's always room to work on ourselves and get better. And this is really a call to love and action for my fellow humans. You know, we so often treat our dog better than we treat ourselves if we smoke or vape. And I think we deserve better. I know I deserve better. And I feel incredibly lucky that I got better. And this is a tool just to help people, you know, break through this really incredible and often impossible seeming addiction.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question? I mean, one of the things I noticed about it, my table tennis coach vapes. And every time, right before COVID, every time I saw him, or every day pretty much, I would send him an article. I don't know what else to do. And I'd have to send it in English and Korean. But the point is there a difference in cultures with this? You know, and what I mean by that is there a physiological difference, or is there a cultural difference as to what we accept and don't accept, or information? And I'm just curious about that. I have a couple of friends that live abroad, and they look at us and say, you people and all the smoking business you're doing. And I'm like, okay, like, well, what are you people doing? I mean, like, what? Is it like smoking everywhere?
Well, I do know this. Part of it, and this is a big part of it, Dr. Pat, is answered by what is the country doing to regulate at inception? And so many countries in the EU have been very hard with regulation. And so they do not have a teen vaping crisis like we do. Our drive to have more freedom, maybe, or give me my liberty. I believe it doesn't include those things that harm us, that my taxes are going to end up paying for. Yeah. So I'm for people wearing seatbelts, and I want that to be regulated. I'm for motorcycle helmets being required, because I want people to live, but I also don't want to be stuck with my Aunt Susie's medical bill when that knucklehead rides off the cliff and we all pay for her care for 20 years when she's in the hospital. Now, that didn't happen, but I have family members that, you know, want to fight for the right to not wear a helmet, and yet they struggle. They would want regulation in other ways. And so I think it really goes to how the nation, and the U.S. has done an awful job with it. We really have been asleep at the wheel. But I think you mentioned South Korea. I will say this. I lived in Japan when I was a younger person after college. I lived in Japan for a year, and I smoked, and so did, it seemed like, every other male human in Japan. They smoked and they loved it. And there's a way that the Japanese hold a cigarette, and it is cellular, or it's certainly cultural. Yep. And I will say, I was back to Japan just a year ago yesterday, Pat. I flew to Japan to visit for the first time in 30 years. And I was struck by a few things. One was the shift around public policy in smoking. Oh. I thought that Japan would be the last to encourage prohibition indoors, at restaurants, in bars. But they, because of the huge cost to their healthcare dollars, had moved aggressively to curb nicotine addiction. And it has not resulted in a country, and they've been similarly hard-edged with vaping. And so I was surprised that I didn't see this huge explosion of vaping, because they've done such a good job at cutting the number of people who vape, and we've done an awful job at it.
Yeah. Brad, can you address some of the warning signs? Because the biggest things that I find with my clients is that parents come to me all the time. My son or daughter is vaping, and they're vaping THC. And what do they look for? And how do they begin to talk to their children? Can you address that?
Yeah it's such a good question, Ellen. You know, when I was a kid and I started smoking at 15, I had a Quaker family who didn't smoke. They didn't drink. And I would stumble in loaded and smoky. And I remember clear as day, my mom would say, "Honey, have you been smoking?" And of course I had been smoking. I smelled like an ashtray, and I smelled like I'd been, you know, drinking Bartles and James wine coolers. And yet when given the incorrect answer, because I said, no, why would you say that about me? She relented. And so this is what I tell parents. One, if your kid vapes, and it is likely they do, drug test them. Test them for THC and test them for nicotine. It's a very simple saliva test. You can get it on the web. The best test for THC is urine. But I say I love testing to reinforce what the truth is. Because with vaping, you don't have that telltale sign of them smelling like an ashtray.
Right.
But you will hear a cough. You will hear that gurgle. You will find the vaping device, which looks like a pretty little USB drive.
Right.
If you don't know better. And then, you know, I say verify the truth, because it is as likely as not that if you have a teenager living in your home or at college that you're paying for them to go to school in one way or another, they are likely vaping, and verify that they're not, because it is a huge risk to their mental health. And it's also a predictor of their addiction to other substances, because it perfectly primes the brain to accept those addictive substance signals.
Yeah, this is a really big issue for the workplace. And people in employment and in the workplace, unless they do random UIs, unless they do something, this is one of those things that, you know, HR really walks a thin sheet of ice around a lot of this. And at the same time, something has to be done, because we are really at epidemic levels right here. Right.
I do think that, and this is sort of the illustrative of the insidious nature of big vape, big tobacco, is when my book first came out there, I was on Good Morning America, and coronavirus was just starting to take from the Trump headlines and sort of break through. It was not Corona all the time. It was still pretty much the Trump news cycle. And so we just got out of the garage on our trip to share this book with America. And negative reviews started coming in, and they all read very similarly that they were written by big tobacco. And I'm sure that there was a concerted effort to downplay the risk. And then you might remember there was something called the French study that showed that in a small group of test group, that nicotine in the body actually was an inhibitor for the coronavirus. It wasn't accurate, but boy, what a great a response from your kid if you say, hey, you know, you need to quit smoking, or your loved one, hey, I'm worried about you, quit smoking. They go, oh my God, look at this. It's actually good for me. It will keep me from getting coronavirus. What an idiotic headline. And yet the French study was not relegated to the heat bin, but instead I started to have to answer it. And so even on Good Morning America, as I was recording it, and it's sort of beautiful, Deborah Roberts works with ABC News, and her husband is Al Roker. And I used to be a weatherman in Washington, D.C. before I got sober. And we had the same news agent called Conrad Shadlin. And so Deborah was doing the interview from home. Al Roker was her producer, was trying to help with the lights and stuff. And it was such a great thing. And then Deborah pulled up a note from her producer, and she said, what about this a French study? And I said, well, let me tell you about that French study, because they have been very, very good, big tobacco, at getting the wrong word out and prohibiting what should be normal regulations of anything that is consumed and inhaled into our most precious of commodities, other than the earth, and that's our bodies.
Wow.
Unbelievable. So all of those myths, I mean, you really, really do discuss them in the book. I mean, the fact that vaping doesn't stop smoking cessation, that vaping is just as addictive as cigarettes, that vaping is also not FDA approved, correct? The other things? That vaping is completely safe. I mean, some other myths that people think. Can you want to address a few more of those?
Well, I think the one that I hear the most is that it's not dangerous. And I just spoke with a dear friend of my friend Daniel, who is from Michigan, and he at 17, I mentioned at the top of our conversation, Dr. Pat and Ellen, about him, and he was at Henry Ford Hospital in Michigan, and in the nation, as I understand it, the very first double lung transplant, who was that young. And it was strictly because the damage he had done to his lungs because of nicotine vaping. Mm-hmm. And Daniel is alive. He's plugging away. He used to run track. He does not run track anymore. He doesn't run. And the statistics for him are devastating. The statistics are that he will live less than 5 years. He takes a daily regimen of anti-rejection drugs to help keep those lungs in him, because, you know, those are somebody else's lungs. And that is a very new technology that allows for lung transplants anyway. You know, I have a niece who has cystic fibrosis, and so have spent time in writing this book at Salt Lake City's Children's Hospital and the cystic fibrosis unit, because they're really at the cutting edge of what do we do with damaged lungs, people with damaged lungs, because kids with humans with cystic fibrosis, that's where the damage really lies, because their lungs get just gummed up with mucus, and they then get scarred, and you essentially suffocate if you have CF. And so with that in my family, I was so curious, you know, when people were talking that, well, lung transplants are the answer. If you muck up your lungs with vaping, if you're one of those rare cases, then, you know, just get a lung transplant. I'm like, trust me, brother, that is not the answer. If that's the answer, I'm a, you know, I've got a bridge I'd like to sell you.
Right.
But the truth is the truth. And the myths are the myths, that our lungs are this incredible ecosystem that takes oxygen from the air that we breathe, gives it to our brain, pumps our heart, allows us to walk, live, and thrive. And anything that we're taxing it with, whether it's outdoor pollution or something as insidious as vaping every 22 minutes or 30 minutes or 50 minutes, as so many do, is not only a bad idea, but I hope that the myths that it's healthy or a fine replacement for cigarette will go the way of the dinosaurs, because it's just not true.
Yeah. One of the things you touch upon in your book, and I know we don't have time to get to take a deep dive, is the psychological aspect of it in the collective consciousness, meaning that I'm hanging out with you. Great news is you stopped smoking and you're vaping, and I'm sitting there and I don't have the knowledge in your book. And I say, I'm so glad you're not smoking, because to general population, right, Brad, to the general population, oh my gosh, anything but smoke. Anything but smoking. And that's why your book is so seriously important, because no, that's not true. So we have to just educate the person, right? The person with the addiction with vaping. But there's this whole other group community that says, thank God you're not smoking. You're just vaping. Just vaping. Maybe that's your next book.
Well, and I think the book does a rich job of, if I say so myself, because I love to write, and I poured my heart into it, because I do love so many people who vape, and I don't see it as, I have not bought the lies that it is a tool to quit. It's simply another addiction with in part unknown long-term effects, but it's certainly no better than cigarettes, and it very, very well may be worse than cigarettes.
Brad, thank you so much. Brad Lamb's book is Quit Vaping, Your 28-Day Program to Stop Smoking E-Cigarettes. We are so thrilled to have you. It's so good to see you. It's been a while.
Ellen, it's great to see you. Dr. Pat, hello in Seattle. I was born in Wenatchee.
Oh, there you go.
Grew up in Oregon. I just love it up there. So thinking of you during all this mystery.
Yeah, thank you. And I want to make a comment on your book. the book, while it may seem like it is for those that are vaping, I am highly encouraging anybody out there, if you are even curious about what your kids are doing, what your spouse is doing, what your partners are doing, if you are even curious about the health and well-being of someone that you love, this book is for you, and then this book is for you for them.
You've been listening to Recovery Recharged with certified life and recovery coach Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx. Don't miss your next opportunity to let me help you recharge your recovery, let go of your secrets, and change the way you think, feel, and act right here on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.